the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races. Fun visits with Tim Hamm talking about his Schuylerville winner and Joe Bravo off a big Saturday Haskell Day card at the Jersey Shore at Monmouth Park. And Rich Migliori joins us for the Monday recap session. Rich, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Very good, and didn't get a chance to see you on Thursday, but once we get started for the first full week of Saratoga on Wednesday, expect to get to watch a little more of the Saratoga live action, and certainly a rousing 4 days business-wise, and the racing quality was there, and all the things you look for, even if the atmosphere is really really difficult to comprehend. What were your initial impressions, Rich?
Well, Steve, I haven't been up there yet. I start on Saratoga Live Wednesday, so I've had this week off. I've been just quiet down at the farm. I mean, watching, it seems surreal, and even just the reaction, you know, from the Andy Serling and Greg Wolf, Maggie Wolf, and all of them, it's obvious it's a bit eerie, a bit surreal, but I'm actually a little bit nervous about how I'm going to feel when I get there, because I've never seen Saratoga anything but a packed house when there's racing there. I've always said I liked going up there in the off season before Saratoga became, you know, a popular town year round, because you could almost feel the ghosts of racing past, the sense of history. And I wonder if it's going to feel a bit like it used to feel when I go up in October and November.
Fair. You know, and I was on, obviously, on track Thursday for opening day. And, you know, then we also ran in the seventh. And it just has a, you're going to sense that, you know, such a, I don't know. It's just, there's a sort of a, I don't want to say emptiness, but it I don't know. It's really strange.
The good news is though, Steve, people are betting, and there is,
yeah, that's that, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, you know, the quality of the cards, people, you know, are still going to be up for it. It's just a shame that, you know, the circumstances dictate that we have to, you know, be diligent and keeping this pandemic as under control as possible. And, you know, the last thing we'd want to see is a huge spike and then there's no racing at all. So it's not ideal. And I certainly feel for the people that want to be there, but I also love some of the people that have gotten creative building the little Saratoga sets in their backyard and having their
it's the craziest,
right? Yeah. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, they did a feature on it on the show, and I really love it. The gentleman's name's escaping me right now, but I'd be honest with you, if I'm done early, I want to go hang out with them for the last couple of races.
it's the greatest thing. And when the picture first emerged, when it came out about 10 days ago, as he was making the preparations for it, and it absolutely caught the imagination, you know, of everybody in and around Saratoga, where you know, pretty much everybody that encamps in the backyard around, you know, the TV umbrella stands, they appreciated right away what, you know, what the whole concept was. And in fact, it's even gotten, you know, more not extravagant, but added a patio to it, and it's really good. And you knew right away that it was gonna be featured, and that media was gonna glom onto it. Really kind of nice. So I think around town too. I know restaurants and Randy Hill and everybody that is going to utilize Ciro's, the backyard, the back section of Ciro's, for watch parties and so forth. They basically, you know, created a clubbish thing for people to to come and enjoy the day. So I'm also hoping, Rich, and for instance, you're coming up, so I'm hoping these first 4 days, ever since we went from 36 to 40 days, these were never, atmosphere-wise, they were never representative of what Saratoga, would typically be. So maybe that's part of it, too, and that we don't have the full complement of people. I mean, the restaurants, from all the reports, they're pretty busy, and, there's people in town. So hopefully that part of it, the momentum on that front, adds a little bit atmosphere, to the whole overall. And getting some owners, getting more owners onto the track, even under the very tight restrictions.
Well, yeah, I think that's a huge step in the right direction. The fact that, we've had that loosen up a little bit. And I'm really glad to hear that, some of the restaurants, most of the restaurants are busy and there's people downtown, because we know the economic impact that the racing season has on the town of Saratoga and the people there. And you've got, I've got a lot of friends that live in Saratoga, and I know how difficult, it's been for everybody, but particularly up there, a town that depends on the tourism in the summer to help it through the rest of the year. So I'm really happy to hear that. I'm curious to see, some of my favorite restaurants like Salivo, if I'm going to have any trouble getting in, or I guess we can do takeout, right?
Well, that's one of the things too. You've got you've got plenty of options that way. But from what I can tell, I mean, we had a lovely dinner last night with Avi and Rhoda Friedberg, and they were busy at Danny's. I saw Bill Gallo on Thursday. Bill said that he had been at Solovo the night before, and they were packed. So. On the street, they're on the street, and then,
sure,
everybody's at 50%. One thing that is amazing is the inventiveness of the restaurateurs with the tent operations and basically garnering the sidewalk and even in some cases portions of the street and cordoning it off and expanding their capacity that way. So it feels like, we're going to have most of the options that that you would want, from what I can tell, from what I'm hearing.
Sure, that's good. And also, one other thing real quick before I forget. The horse you ran Thursday, turn that horse back in distance.
Well, up here, though, obviously we're not going to go short. I mean, she got in trouble. The Cardenas was all over the place and almost clipped heels. Tyler, as Tyler said when he came back, he said, "Ugh," I was in her mouth the whole first half of the race. He said, he's lucky they didn't go down in the first turn.
Yeah, I think that's I mean, I know 5.5 isn't a good option there, but this, when a horse doesn't want to shut off as properly as they need to, especially on that turf course, that's what it lends itself to, horses that don't maybe want to go quite that far. I've seen it time and time again. And that horse actually, didn't that horse run well last year sprinting on the turf? Closed a lot of ground?
No, it was more, she was more, when she stretched out is when she won. And then she had the two good races downstate when she came back after pandemic and after the winter. It just feels like the mile on the 16th. I don't. I mean, obviously, for another start later in the meet here, her race was over in the first turn.
No doubt, and we've seen that a lot. In Saratoga, turf trips are what it's all about. Position. You got to go forward. You got to get your spot going forward. You got to have horse to hold your spot. It's not a turf course that you can get your position going backwards and expect to have success, and you've got to save ground on at least one of the turns. So if you're coming from off the pace, you've got to also then get lucky to get the right kind of trip, because you can't afford to be wide unless you're much the best on both turns. It just does not, it doesn't work. This is something I spoke with at length with Dylan Davis about, because it always seemed like heading to Saratoga, he would kind of struggle the first week until he adjusted, and just about getting more aggressive, getting your position going forward, and he's only has one win so far, but he's riding lights out, hitting the board, because why? He's going forward to get his position.
Well, and take a second, and then we're going to talk before we even do results. I want you to talk about the the all these decisions that are going up to the stewards and the some of the, you know, some of the hurly burly we're seeing from riders. But explain that transition, because the sweeping turns on both courses at Belmont versus what we've got here when it comes to the Mellon and the Inner. I mean, this is a much tighter, particularly on the Inner. So explain how the difficulties that arise and how guys have to, you know, make adjustments and understand what kind of mounts they've got in these two spots.
Well, yeah, I mean, just what you're saying, the configuration of Belmont Park's turf courses are much kinder for horses going into turns. They can kind of gallop into the bridle, into position. They don't have to be sent off their feet to make sure they get a spot. So it's a double-edged sword in Saratoga. On the inner turf, you want to go forward to get your position. But then if you get too free, your horse gets to go in too much, they're a bit out of control into the turn, and they don't corner as well because now it's a 7/8 turf course. Think about going from, you know, a mile and a quarter turf course, a mile and 3/8 turf course at Belmont Park to a 7-furlong turf course, and position has become so much more of a premium, so you're tending to let horses do more into the first turn. And like I said, now they've got to take this hairpin turn with everybody kind of with the same idea, getting that crush into the turn. And if you take a hold of a horse, their head gets up, they can't turn, they can't corner. So it's riding a tightrope about going forward but still having enough control of your horse. And, you know, you hear people talk about it that have, you know, haven't had that experience. Just so people understand, it's not driving a car. And if you don't have a horse set up properly, balanced to switch to his left lead and kind of fall into the turn, they're just the inertia, the sheer speed, is the centrifugal force is going to take them out, and now you blow the turn and, you know, it creates havoc behind you. So it's very difficult, especially when you're so used to the Belmont turf course. You've ridden there, this year was a shorter meet but usually much longer, and then boom, opening day Saratoga, you know, you've got to go forward, you've got to have position. And horses just don't corner as well if they're a little bit out of control. So, you know, you've got to figure out pretty quick how much you need to do to get there. And also understanding your competition, understanding your horse. You know, if you have a rank horse, I can't turn them on too much because then I'm going to lose them in the first turn. If you've got guys around you, you know who's going to be more aggressive, who's going to be less aggressive. You try to exploit other people's habits, other horses' habits. You know, when you talk to riders about preparations, well, I watched my horse's tapes. Forget that. Watch everybody else's. If there's 10 in a race, watch every single horse and have an idea of, you know, wow, he's a big, heavy-headed horse that won't handle these turns, and I don't want to commit outside of him because he's a horse that's likely to not corner well, and then I'm hung up on his outside. You know, things like that. You have the ability. There's so many tools now. It's not like years ago when old geezers like me started and you couldn't watch tape. You had to go to the stewards and ask for permission to watch races, you know, and you, if there was time, maybe you could, maybe you couldn't. Now you just go to a replay center. You go online. You can pull anything up. And if you're not doing it, someone else is. And it's just too competitive to give anybody an edge.
Now, a couple of things that you said lead in, and I appreciate those insights, Rich. It didn't take long Thursday for the action to start at Saratoga and get everybody, you know, disgusted. The second race, price talk for Jorge Abreu and Seth Klarman, and this is a horse that gets disqualified for an incident that under ideal scenario is understood and gets a recourse much more acceptable and fair for horse players. I mean, this horse was much the best and gets taken down for really something that you'd be much better off giving Manny Franco 3 days and a small fine. And instead, everybody who bet the right horse gets nothing. And I don't know. you know, I don't know how else to introduce that conversation.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I totally understand the point, and I hate the fact that the public ultimately gets punished. Like you said, people that pick the right horse. But here's the issue and the balance. Riders, especially the amount of money that riders are making nowadays, getting 3 days, and unfortunately everybody knowing how to work the system and appealing days and putting them off, they've lost their teeth, that punishment. It really has. You know, years ago, you would get a minimum of 5, and usually it was 7 days, not 3. Three, you know, come on. I miss Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I can ride the weekend, and this isn't convenient. I can put it off for a couple months. And, you know, it's really lost its power. And fines, to me, are almost a joke at this point. You're going to find a guy at 2,500 who's pulling down 20,000 a week. I'll take the fine. I mean, you know, and it was my experience as a rider, the connections of horses would be more mad at you when you got disqualified and you'd lose business and mounts. And that was more of a deterrent than anything else to not ride roughly or make mistakes. So understanding the gambler's dilemma, the fan's dilemma, that and not wanting them to be punished, but understanding from a rider's point of view that it's actually safer for riders and horses if they disqualify horses because it's a bigger deterrent. And I think part of the problem now is it's open to you know interpretation, what caused a horse to placing, what's a foul. You know, I was part of the incident that precipitated the rule change when I got taken down on Silver Squire, which is still top three disqualifications you're ever going to see in your life. It was ridiculous, and they had to come up with a response to the inept disqualification. And they said, well, now it costs the horse a placing. Well, if you look at the body check that was thrown opening day, you can't say with any certainty that it didn't cost that horse the placing. He basically got hip checked. And again, being understanding of the public taking taking on the chin, if you will, I think they need to go back to a foul is a foul. Guys need to maintain straighter courses. Let's cool the herding. Start ruling with an iron fist. Tell guys that they better start gaining more control of their horses leaving the gate because this nonsense said, well, it was out of the gate. Please, I rode for almost 30 years. If you really want to make an effort, yeah, one out of 20 has just got something on his mind and he's going to make a hard left or a hard right and there's nothing you can change about it. But knowing that you can get away with stuff out of the gate, you throw your reins at them and they go wherever they want and you know, well, yeah, it's out of the gate. You know, it's weak. It's very weak for the best riders in the world to be able to get away with that. And I think you've got to be understanding of the fact that they are capable of better. And if you lay down that law and you rule with an iron fist and you say this will not be accepted, in a week's time you will see much cleaner riding, much cleaner racing. So I think going back to a foul is a foul and stop with this, you know, someone's going to decide whether it costs somebody a placing or not. You're running next to me, Steve. We're running, you know, a mile together. And a quarter of a mile from the finish of our mile run, I punch you in the stomach. You're going to tell me that didn't take air out of you? How can I qualify? Right? I mean, really, how can I qualify how much that affected you being able to finish your last? I hit you with an elbow in the solar plexus. These horses get hit. It takes air out of them. I'll give you a quick story. Pock to Pock, real nice sprinter for Billy Turner years ago, stake winner. I rode him an allowance race. He was as short a price could be, 1-9. And he got slammed leaving the gate. And he wound up winning, but he was life and death to beat horses. He could have beat 10 lengths. And I didn't really correlate the two. You know, you'd get bumped around leaving the gate, whatever. I said, well, maybe he just didn't come back as good. Well, the next start was like the Bold Ruler. He got away clean. He ran like a thief in the night, and he won the Bold Ruler off a race. I didn't think he was going to be good enough to win off of. And it made me realize, wow, him getting hit leaving the gate took the air out of him, and I actually heard it like, oh. So I know it's not simple, and I am sensitive to the fact that I don't want the public to be hurt on these kind of calls. But again, it goes back to, if riders really have to pay a price. And I remember getting fired at a Barnes, you know, doing something I, you know, knew I shouldn't have done, but took a shot and got disqualified. And we're not going to use you for a while. Well, believe me, that's more of a deterrent than any fine, any suspension.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and you know, it's means a lot. You know, hearing it from a rider who obviously, you know, tens of thousands of occasions. You know, we also had yesterday a situation where it certainly seemed that the objection and the inquiry was. I mean, I understand why it occurred, but the incident was more, you know, just kind of horses coming together and a horse probing for a spot that really might not have been fully materialized and that kind of thing. And I mean, that would have been I sent out a, you know, nice job stewards for leaving this one alone. And it did seem that everybody agreed. You know, very rare that you get universal agreement on a call either way.
Yeah, I think they got the right call. I thought that while the 8 horses number was blinking, I thought the 6 horses number should have been blinking, and I thought more of the onus was on him. And I don't think either one of them should have come down, but it seemed like they were really concentrating on the winner, the 8 Bust and Shout. When Valmont took more of a step in, Bust and Shout wasn't dead on the rail when he came off the corner of the turn. And I think people had it in their head, well, he stepped out. He was already out in that path when Irad was kind of lurking in behind them with Dowses Beach. And I think some of the onus is on Irad there. You can't linger in spots. Either you commit to it and you go forward, or you wait and let it play out after everybody switches their leads. I think he kind of was trying to hedge his bets, and you can't hedge your bets in those kind of spots because they are not going to go perfectly straight, particularly before everybody's kind of gotten off their left lead onto their right lead and balanced out. It's just impossible. You're talking about 1,000-pound animals, and we're only talking maybe 12 inches was the difference between him being okay and having to check the way he did. So I think they got the call right. I just think that if there was going to be any kind of a change, I thought the 6 Valmont created more of it when he switched leads, he stepped in. And I'm not blaming Manny Franco. Again, these horses are big, and when they shift one lead to the other, they are going to move. And as a rider, like, you learn the jockey 101, going to a turn, you don't go, you know, a quarter of a way inside of a horse going to the turn because they're going to switch their left lead, and they're going to come in, and riders will come out a little bit more to give themselves room so a horse can change leads and fall into the turn. So you know, learned early, you're either all the way in there or you're all the way out of there because you don't have ownership of that spot. And I really don't believe Irad had ownership of that spot. Now, maybe if he had hit that spot just before they turned for home and got his shoulders in there, but he didn't. He was kind of, well, let's see how this pays out. And he was right up on heels. And thankfully, he didn't go down because he jumped all over the winner. I mean, it looked like his chin was almost on top of the horse's rump. I mean, I don't know how his legs didn't get tangled up. So thankfully, you know, it wasn't catastrophic because that could have been ugly.
No doubt. I'm glad we actually went through that too. Let's actually talk a couple of results and the fact that you had a chance to watch all the racing at both venues, Haskell Day and Saturday, and everything that went on at Saratoga. Some impressions. What did you come away with from the weekend?
Well, opening day, I thought the Skyville, that's filly. I'm just trying to pull up charts as we're talking. Day out of the office.
Yeah, we just talked to Tim Ham.
Man, I you know, I was watching the post parade. I had gone off hiking, got back in time to watch the stakes, and I'm watching her warm up. She looked like a 4-year-old colt. She didn't look like a 2-year-old filly. She looked like she had size on everybody. Her demeanor was as focused and intense as you're ever going to see a 2-year-old filly. I'm honestly, I wish I had like paid attention sooner because I had a bet on her just the way she warmed up. She looked like the guy that kicks sand on the beach and the other guys, she looked like the girl that kicks sand on the beach and the other girls. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, she looked like a four-year-old. And then ran like it. You could see 70 yards into the race, Junior Alvarado's got a good hold of her, and she's just striding into the bridle. Very, very impressive, into mischief. Boy, he just throws a really good horse, doesn't he? That was one. Decorated Invader. Now, obviously, I've got a little bit biased because my son's involved with West Point. I'm friends with Terry Finley, but I think this horse is an Amazon. This isn't even his trip, the way that the race planned out, with Get Smoking on the long, loose lead, and he was the one kind of in calling distance. I think he's better when he gets more cover and he can really kick, but the fact that he was still professional, came home as fast as they did, this is an exciting horse, and he's got that old-time thoroughbred look. You look at him, and he reminds me of the really good turf horses in the late 70s, early 80s, horses you'll see out of Europe, like more like a Nijinsky type, just a really, really strong, good-looking horse. So that was fun. And how about Clemence Bonne? Christophe and his crew are just hitting on all cylinders. Everything they're putting on the track, that two-year-old, Momos, my gosh, how good is that colt?
Yep.
Another one with a very, very serious demeanor, like knew what his job was. And, for people that don't know, Miguel Clemence, Christophe's son, is up in Saratoga with the two-year-olds, and Christophe is at Belmont, but he goes back and forth. He's probably in Saratoga one or two days a week. Give Miguel a lot of credit as his dad's assistant, having the horses that have been, stabled in Saratoga all spring, hitting on all cylinders and almost being one of them. So, great job by them. I mean, we expect, Chad Brown to win in bunches, and we're going to see that. And, incredible 100 grade ones in a fairly short amount of time. And you think about how long Chad's going to train for, what those numbers are going to look like when he's finally retired from it, how many years from now. So hats off to him. But what the Clemence Bonne's doing with not as big a numbers, I think is really, really impressive.
And no doubt. And we're going to talk to Chris in the next half hour or so. So we're looking forward to that. And, sweep the three-year-old stakes. And you mentioned the two-year-old on dirt as well. How about the Haskell card? What did you take away from Authentic? Is that a horse that just simply isn't going to go a step beyond 9 furlongs, or was he getting a little little unfocused? And Mike Smith threw a lot of that out at the press conference afterward in the Breeders' Cup Garden. Some thoughts about that Haskell?
Well, listen, I know. I utmost respect for Mike Smith. Obviously, we're friends, and his resume doesn't need me to embellish on it. I heard a lot of jockey speak. He's good. I mean, there's no doubt. I don't think he really wants to go that far. I'm sorry. I'm pulling up the chart right now as we're talking. I guess the question would be, I don't think he's jumping off Honor AP. To ride Authentic, do you?
No.
So, to me, and honestly, I don't even know that he was the best horse in this race. He was good. He was resolute. He got it done. But the New York bred, New York traffic, I think he may have been best. Kind of wandered to the outside, watch Mike Smith finish and tell me that nose difference. I think the New York bred may have been best, and Authentic got it done, and hats off to him. He ran, but New York traffic to me, I think, was the best horse.
It was pretty amazing, actually, because just when you think, okay, he's pulling away, and then New York traffic surges again, and you could see Smith go back to work, and get Authentic to the wire. There was a lot of good racing.
Authentic was all in. He was all in. There was nothing left. But if you go back and watch the race, watch what I'm talking about—the turning for home and the way New York traffic kind of meandered out and kind of lost his focus a little bit. And then again, just, and he is a horse, New York traffic, watching him from over the winter. He almost looks like a bicycle. You got to keep pedaling, keep pedaling, mm-hmm. keep pedaling, because he keeps finding, you know. And you ride a horse that keeps finding, well, you just keep on working on him. Keep on, keep going forward, because they, you know, hopefully they won't lose that position that he lost when Authentic, you know, got away from him at the top of the stretch. And that was the difference between winning and losing.
The turf racing was terrific too, and you know, having just talked to Joe Bravo, that you know, his fifth United Nations win in 9 years, and the matchmaker was terrific too. Paco Lopez getting, you know, basically getting by Joe with that nay lady nay for Chad. That was the whole sequence of the six stakes. It was really a fun afternoon.
Great day of racing. Again, you know, just the fact that we have racing going on at you know, obviously Saratoga, Monmouth, these different venues, and, you know, through extremely difficult circumstances, and to put on cards like this, it, you know, makes, you know, everybody feel like there's some sense of normalcy. Even if you can't attend, you can, you know, follow along, wager, you know, get involved. I mean, even me, like I said, I would do some farm work or go off in errands or a hike and get back in time. You know, I can time it so I can watch, you know, three or four races that I was really interested in. But Joe Bravo rides that turf course better than anybody, maybe ever. I mean, he really just has a knack, particularly on the Monmouth Park turf course. You know, he's seemingly always in a place to take advantage of a situation or put his horse in a position to win. And you know, you think about United Nations and how prestigious that race is. Five United Nations, and not on horses that, you know, were always supposed to win. Obviously, this horse went off better than 10-1. I mean, you know, to me, listen, we talk about riders, and there's so many good riders, and a lot of what separates riders at different stages of their careers is confidence. When a guy's got confidence and he's riding unencumbered, not worried about what anybody else thinks about what he's doing, or if the owner's going to get mad because the instructions were this and he called an audible because he saw an opportunity to seize on a situation. It's about confidence. But you tell more about riders, not even horses that win, but horses that run better than they've been running or normally run, or outrun their odds, maybe is the best way to put it. I've seen guys ride great races on horses that just aren't good enough to win, finish third or fourth and get criticized. I've seen guys ride terrible races and win races and be told, wow, what a great ride. You know, it is horse racing at the end of the day. You need the vehicle to carry you there. It's your responsibility, your job, to give them every chance to do their best showing, to give their best showing. And, you know, we get so caught up in results most of the time, and we're so result-oriented that we miss the little nuances of what makes a really good ride, as opposed to, the horse was best, and, yeah, he didn't do anything wrong, but the best horse won. I mean, to me, anybody can win on the best horse. It's when you consistently get horses to outperform or overperform.
Well, we'll be treated to another 2 months here at Saratoga, and what's your schedule going to be on the show, or is it fluid on the Saratoga Lives?
You know, it's pretty fluid. Like, I'm going to be on at least 2 days a week, Wednesdays and Thursdays, some Saturdays, some Sundays. This week, I'm on Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday. And I'll be on from the start of the show to like 3:40 every day. Every day,
nice.
That I'm on this week.
Very nice. So the first half with all the shifts, and it's mix and match. It's the way the team comes together. And I've only got to see a little bit of these first 4 days because I was traveling around between after. Doing the opening day show at Saratoga, headed to Monmouth for the next 3 days. So we'll get into a nice rhythm here, Rich, and I'll be over myself over by the racing office broadcasting probably a couple of days a week, the way it's shaping up. So we'll do more. Rich has been joining us every other Monday, recapping and staying in touch. And now with Saratoga starting, we can really, you know, look forward to what should be a great 7 weeks.
I'm looking forward to getting up there. Like I said, I'm a little nervous how it's all going to feel, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I tell you what, I got to compliment the team on the show, not just the people in front of the camera who are terrific. You know, just such a great, diverse blend of talent, but the people behind the scenes, all of our producers and directors and tech people and editors, what they're doing, and if you get a chance to pop your head in and watch them work, I'm not going to start naming names because I'll leave them out. Just I have so much respect for those people because they make the people in front of the camera look better.
No, it's as we've said, it was one thing when it was like 2.5 to 3 hours a day, when the whole concept started, and it seemed like an amazing accomplishment to do a Saturday show 5 days a week. Now it's a full fledged, you know, all race day broadcast, and it's remarkable, frankly, and every race of the Saratoga season available on Saratoga Live, including Rich Migliori. Rich, thanks so much. The two explainers too on the two of the incidents, one a DQ, one a no change.
Well, I hope it makes sense to people.
Of course it does.
I know people get hung up in what they believe, but I hope that at least maybe it lends a different perspective.
Rich Migliori, everybody, and follow Mig at Richard Migliori on Twitter. And season starts for Rich in terms of broadcast responsibilities on Wednesday. We're going to take a break here. I got Nancy Uri Holtis coming in. I want to make sure everybody's tied on for Indiana Grand this week. 4 days each day. Certainly the Pick 5 is going to garner your attention. But the Quarter Horse fans, there's a big $100,000, $130,000, $150,000, a couple of futurities today and tomorrow that ends the card or comes late in the card, typically the ninth race. So we'll check in with Nancy, and we'll also get a look back since the Indiana Derby Oaks cards every other week. We're doing Canterbury and Indy, and it's Indy this week. Christoph Clement is going to join us as well. Austin Reed, I want to get to, because it's opening day at Finger Lakes. I want to give them the big spotlight, the baby spotlight, up at Farmington, New York. Back after this, Nancy Uri Holtis.
The latest racing. At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Be
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit DRF.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius XM Sports.